You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, August 27th. Nice to have you back here up north. Live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network, Parker Olson is producing things down in Madison Studio A2. Coming up later this hour, we're going to be talking to the national president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten. She is on her way to Wisconsin as we speak for an event later today, all about the big bloated boondoggle from Trump and congressional Republicans and the damage it's going to do to education, healthcare, and just life overall in the state of Wisconsin as well as around the country. So we'll talk to Randy Weingarten about that. Coming up in just a few minutes from now, about 7:35, we'll get that started. And in our next hour, we'll talk to author Laura Bird about book banning. They seem to spring up this time of year like weeds. When the school year gets going, there are people who talk about banning books from certain school libraries. We'll talk about, you know, what motivates that, some of the misinformation about it, and what you can do when these kinds of measures come up in your local school. That's all along the way. Temperatures right now include 53 here in the Chippewa Valley, 55 in La Crosse. It's 53 in Amory, 54 in Oshkosh, and at the Fork and Knife restaurant in Manitowoc, it is 55 degrees right now. So we've got a nice pleasant morning here that takes us to Brittany and a forecast for today, which seems almost as pretty and picture perfect as yesterday, with maybe a change in the not too distant future. Brittany, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am pretty good.
You're still doing
cold front.
Yes, which is why I see you still got the hoodie going here. As we were talking yesterday, you know, Hans Breitenmoser had to lend his hoodie to his daughter. I had to lend a hoodie to my grandson. And it's like, how many hoodies? You know, some people just collect all manner of things. I've maybe got a half a dozen hoodies. How's your hoodie game over there?
Oh, it's strong. I have a ton of hoodies. The one thing I get when I go visit and travel places or go see something cool, like I'm wearing Pictured Rocks hoodie right now. So, you know, it's a destination kind of gathering, like I like to do. But then, hey, it's perfect for camping. It's perfect to lend. It's perfect for mornings like this.
I was going to say, it's perfect for about 9-10 months out of the year, or like right now in the middle of summer in August. It's hoodie weather for today, one more day.
Sure is. It is 43 degrees in Antigo and Merrill. That is the cold spot in the state. Meanwhile, Ashland and Madeline Island sitting pretty at 61 degrees right now. But that's because it's cloudy. And that's because you've got rain rolling through this morning. This cold front is going to be sagging south through the state tonight and overnight. But throughout the day today, we're still going to see a lot of sunshine, especially south and west in the state. But further north and east, those showers are already starting to move through, like I mentioned, mainly off Lake Superior this morning, kind of hugging that border between the UP and Wisconsin through this afternoon. And then that front pushes everything through later tonight. So some light showers, maybe some thunder out there. These are not going to be strong or severe storms. They're really only going to bring a trace of rain to a quarter of an inch at max. Highs today still hitting the mid-70s all across the state. So this is very comfortable conditions. By tomorrow, after the cold front passes, we are looking at 60 to 65 degrees for a good eastern half of the state. But out west, especially southwest, you could still hit some upper 70s tomorrow. So this cold front isn't really reinforcing anything too wild. But when we go Thursday night, I will say chances of frost far northeast do start to sink in just far. Now, as we go into the weekend, cooler, 60s on Friday, mid-60s to mid-70s on Saturday and Sunday, and then we're going to be in the upper 70s as we move into Monday for Memorial Day. So it is warming up. Summer weather is still coming back, but still a cold blast today.
Labor Day. Now, before anybody goes, oh, it's a rerun, they're talking about Memorial Day. No, Labor Day is what we're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that?
It's all right. You know,
it's in the spirit of summer.
Exactly.
Live
well,
radio.
And that's when you're more likely to get, you know, 60s would be Memorial Day. Labor Day, you'd want to see your 80s. Oh, look, Pat's whining again. Let's go to Robin Tigerton. Good morning. Partly cloudy and 50. Yesterday, I had mowing jobs in Wittenberg, and highways 29 and 45 were busy with traffic before the Labor Day weekend. Today, I've got lawns to mow in Tigerton. The weather has been perfect. I love the fall-like weather, he writes. It's another hoodie start. I keep them in my truck. That way, you can wear them in the morning. Then by noon, take the hoodie off as it gets warmer. In other words, layers. What do we tell everybody?
Season.
Yep. It's layer season already. Have your layers nearby. And it is. That is, you know, one of the pleasant parts of living here, is that if you've got a collection of hoodies, the way Brittany does, you know, you're not wearing the same thing over and over again. So,
nope.
All right, Brittany, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next hour.
Sounds good.
All right. Hey, sign up for our daily newsletter. UpNorthNewsWI.com is the place to go. Hit subscribe up in the top banner. In today's edition, it includes a story about the old Pabst Brewery in Milwaukee, which, believe it or not, I actually worked there for a week. Once I was doing a bunch of different office jobs and worked in the offices at Pabst for a while. But anyway, the old brewery still there, being refurbished into all kinds of other uses. And I'm going to tell you, the place is called Best Place at the historic Pabst Brewery. And I know that throws some people off until I remind them that Jacob Best was the name of the guy that started the brewery that eventually became Pabst. So Best Place is named for Jacob Best. And Best Place just scored a $50,000 grant as part of the American Express National Trust for Historic Preservation, backing historic small businesses. It will give Best Place and other restaurants around the U.S. a chance to invest in potential renovations and expansion. So if you're in the Milwaukee area and you have not been over in the old Pabst Brewery area recently, you should go take a look at some of the buildings that are there and the ways that they have been redone. Also in the newsletter is an article from Selena Heller talking about Wisconsin retirees who recognize that Social Security, having just turned 90 years old, needs to be strengthened, not threatened, the way it's being threatened right now by the current regime in Congress. And there's also an article in there about a new climate lawsuit. You see these in several states, Hawaii most notably, but it's been in Montana, I want to say Florida and New York, but now here in Wisconsin as well, where young people helped by nonprofits are filing lawsuits to make sure that state laws are adhere to the state constitution when it comes to ensuring that young people have life, liberty, and safety, and that includes the environment they live in. And we're going to be talking more about this with Melissa Baldoff in this week's Climate Check. That'll be coming up at 8:20 here on these mornings, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. Tony shouting layers on YouTube with what has to be 7 or 8 exclamation points on there. Yes, we're very much in favor of layers here. The Brewers were winners. Once again, they had to not come back, but they had to protect what had been an easy lead, 6-0 on Monday, and again, 6-0 last night. But in both cases, they turned into nail biters. Isaac Collins had a bases loaded sacrifice fly in the bottom of the ninth to bring home the winning run, 9-8, the final. William Contreras and Bryce Terang each hit 2-run homers for the Brewers. Game 3 of that series takes place this evening. Once again, the pregame starts at 6:05 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Park Falls, and Hayward. I'm going to read now from an article in the New York Times, Katie Rogers, White House reporter. And usually I'll look at an article and then maybe interpret some of what I'm seeing here, but Katie Rogers' writing really gets to the heart of the essence of the nauseating spirit of whatever that thing was that happened in the White House yesterday. Ostensibly, it was known as a cabinet meeting, but it lasted 3 hours and 15 minutes, and it was just 3 hours and 15 minutes of his cabinet members going around the table and offering him praise. That's all it was. It was a televised meeting that lasted almost half the workday. Katie Rogers writes, in front of a wall of cameras, the old apprentice host offered a clear window into the way he was running his administration, starting with an ego that appeared to need frequent feeding and blustery stamina. "This has never been done before," the president said at one point, in between calling on cabinet secretaries to speak and marveling over reporters' ability to hold microphones and cameras aloft for several hours. Yeah, they were really looking forward to that part. What was supposed to be a quick photo spray becomes 3 hours of cabinet officers taking their turns, she writes, each working a little bit harder than the last to offer Mr. Trump praise and assure him that they were working to tackle his long list of grievances. They talked about, transgender sports, violent crime crackdowns, the ongoing threat of windmills, the foul state of traffic medians, the speed with which water flows, and attempts at securing peace deals for as many as 7 international wars, a number that seems to grow by the day, she writes. Mr. Trump, a pop culture maven, had relatively little to say about the biggest news of the day, that would be Taylor Swift's engagement to Travis Kelce, other than saying, "I wish them a lot of luck." The cabinet event was billed as a celebration of American workers ahead of Labor Day. Yet with a running time of 3 hours and 15 minutes, it would be considered a wildly inefficient meeting at any other workplace. The actual policy menu was just gristle in comparison to red meat politics. But for an afternoon, the Trump White House really was as radically transparent as Trump likes to say it is. "There's something really nice about just, the openness of what we're doing," Mr. Trump mused as he closed out the gathering. He also seemed interested in dangling the idea that at any moment, his cabinet members could be humiliated on national TV. He said, "Each one of these people spoke apparently happy with their performances. If I thought one of them did badly, I would call that person out." As the hours ticked by, Trump's cabinet members highlighted the cost in hours, in money, perhaps in karma, of keeping a seat at his table. And many did so while testing the apparently imaginary boundaries of the Hatch Act, which prohibits federal employees from engaging in political activities on the job. The updates ranged from the enthusiastic to the servile, and they went on for hours. Lori Chavez de Reamer, the labor secretary, implored the president to come to her agency and look at his big, beautiful face on a banner. And if you've never seen that, go look at it. Go look up the photo of how in front of the Labor Department and perhaps a couple of other Washington, D.C. buildings, they have put up banners that are several stories tall with Trump's face on them. And if you're looking for them on social media, no doubt you will see those banners compared side by side with similar banners on government buildings in Moscow and China. There was Robert F. Kennedy talking about radioactive shrimp and saving the whales from wind power. The same Robert Kennedy Jr. who once sawed the head off a whale and then drove it home. Trump and Kennedy engaged in back and forth about the rates of autism in young boys, science having nothing to do with anything in the conversation. And on it went with one of his cabinet members saying, "The only thing I wish for," he says, "is that the Nobel Committee finally gets its act together and realizes you are the single finest candidate since the Nobel Peace Prize was created." Thus ends the 3-hour cabinet meeting that you all paid for at the White House today. Randy Weingarten, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, will be joining us in about 15 minutes. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
There's a chance that during the break you might have heard Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area talking about some of the political news that he follows. So I just wanted to remind you that one of his most recent articles that he talked about here yesterday is called A Too Early Breakdown of the 2026 Race for Governor in Wisconsin. And of course, you'll find that over at the recombobulationarea.news. And as the political editor for Civic Media, you find a lot of what he's covering on civicmedia.us as well. Also on one of the Civic Media newscasts here this morning, they're talking about the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program, or just the Stewardship Program for short, a program that began back in 1989 and has been renewed throughout the years as a way to purchase land for conservation, provide easements to protect land from overdevelopment, and then do things to the land that make it more accessible to the public for recreation and relaxation rather than, you know, another strip mall and another golf course. It has for years been a one of the shining stars of bipartisanship. Back when Republicans were more like, you know, Teddy Roosevelt Republicans and understood that this is a big country. There's plenty of room for development. There's plenty of room for people. But there are some places that if you don't protect them, if you don't conserve them, they're going to be lost forever. It was Teddy Roosevelt Republicans that gave us the National Park System, the anniversary of which we celebrated, was it yesterday? But that's not how it's working anymore. Because as the Republican Party has been captured more by, you know, say the William McKinley Republicans who were in charge just before Teddy Roosevelt, the people who think you can run the economy based on tariffs, the people who feel like there's no piece of land that can't be bulldozed and made money off of it. It's this group of Republicans that basically took it out of the budget. Governor Tony Evers proposed a large reauthorization for the program, about $1 billion over 10 years. And instead, Republicans removed the program entirely. And so the program is funded through 2026. But after that, it would go away. Well, now both Republicans trying to save face and Democrats are trying to save the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. And it's that they disagree on the manner in which to do it that is noteworthy right now. But I'm going to remain hopeful that the two sides can come together and find ways to renew the program, provide the oversight that Republicans are looking for while continuing its core mission of making sure that Wisconsin remains this beautiful place to live in, to work in, to study in, to do business in. And we do, like I say, have room. We have room for farming. We have room for recreation. We have room for development. But to just allow it to happen completely without restraint, without any thought of conservation, would just be an absolute tragedy. So Democrats have put out their version of the legislation. There would be an oversight board, 17 people on there, $72 million in spending each year, which is up from the current $33 million, but again, less than what Governor Evers was proposing, which would have been up to $100 million per year. Of the $72 million in spending that would be authorized under the Democratic bill, about $17 million would be for land acquisition, $45 million for upkeep and repair of current property so that we can enjoy these places. Because again, it makes no sense to turn a place into a recreational area and then not do the maintenance to keep it a nice place to go. Another $8 million would be for local boat facilities and $2 million more for motorized recreation programs. Under the Democratic bill, projects costing $2.5 million or more would require approval by this new board. And if that board did not take up a project for review within 120 days or 4 months, it would be considered automatically approved. That, of course, is in response to what Republicans had been doing with stewardship programs, and that was bottling them up in committee without any timeline at all. So they didn't have to go on record as saying they were against conservation programs. They just simply had to keep them bottled up in committee and never have them come up for a vote. Republicans that put forward their own version of the bill as well that would bring back some kind of a stewardship program. Again, it would be with some oversight. I believe the Republican bill was about $1 million that would require a board approval in order to move forward. The authors of the Republican proposal are Tony Kurtz and Patrick Teston of Stevens Point, and they say they are looking forward to working with Democrats to reform and reauthorize the stewardship program, according to Teston. He says he looks forward to reviewing the proposal brought forward by my Democrat colleagues to see where we can work together and find common good. Well, if you're still unable to actually say the word Democratic when talking about the Democratic Party, I have reason to cast doubt on whether you're actually going to be negotiating in good faith. But, you know, again, that's another one of those own the libs kinds of things, is to misstate the name of the party. It's really funny if you're a Republican, apparently. So that's where we sit with the stewardship program, currently set to expire at the end of 2026. And now with fairer maps, it becomes a little bit easier for voters to see if Republicans want to head into the 2026 cycle saying that they are doing more than paying lip service to conserving land in Wisconsin for future use, for our grandkids and for our current recreational and relaxation needs. So more to come on that. Coming up next, we're going to talk to the president, the national president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. It's time for our homeroom segment where we highlight public schools and the threats they face from politicians and grifters alike. We have a special guest this morning, the national president of the American Federation of Teachers, AFT, Randy Weingarten. She's en route right now to Eau Claire for an event later today called Fighting Back, a Western Wisconsin community forum. She'll be joined by labor leaders, including AFT Wisconsin president John Shelton, who we heard from on Monday, Representative Christian Phelps, who visited with us last Wednesday, and State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underley. So this is a panel that clearly knows what is currently spewing out of Washington, D.C. I talked to Randy Weingarten just around 5 o'clock this morning, just before she got on the plane to head this way, and I started by asking what motivated her to attend today's event right here in the Heartland.
So first, I never go where I'm not invited, and I was asked to come by our Wisconsin leadership and membership to talk to them, you know, Claire, about what the impact of this, you know, of the federal policies are on Wisconsin, and, you know, what has happened in terms of the third district instead of the current occupant of the third congressional district, helping people in Wisconsin. It looks like he's more interested in currying favor with Donald Trump. And so we wanted to really talk to members and talk to community activists about what the real deal is in terms of the impact of the bill that passed this summer. And frankly, how there's a rollback instead of actually helping people have a better economic life, it's really hurting people. So whether it's getting rid of the clean energy jobs or whether it's the what has happened in the rollbacks of nutritional services, what's happening in terms of the rollbacks of Medicaid, which is really going to hurt places like healthcare centers in Black River Falls and Sparta. There's real impacts in this bill that basically gave a tax cut to the rich. So we wanted to talk about this and talk about it in terms of what the real deal is. And that's why I'm coming to Wisconsin today. I've been in Wisconsin many, 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 many times, but I'm really honored to be with the people who make a difference in the lives of others today.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned all of those other areas. It would be enough if just education leaders talked about the cuts separately, or healthcare leaders, or people about local services, but there appear to be no silos in this effort to convey all of the damage in this mega bill.
No, there's no silos. And in fact, well, actually there is one silo: billionaires. Billionaires did very, 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 very well in this bill. But what's happened is, and you see it in Mr. Trump's poll numbers, you see it in terms of, you know, this the dystopian fear that people have in America right now, the division, the fear. We're far from a golden age. What we're seeing is that people voted for him because they wanted a better life. And as a labor movement, we know that. We fight every day for a better life for working people. So people have a good life. They're entitled to a good life. That's what workers deserve, the hard work they put in every day. But what's happened is, between the increases in prices, the decreases in affordability, and now all this federal policy that seems to make it worse, it's not a surprise to me that Donald Trump is now changing the agenda and trying to talk about crime, because the economic, where the working people are having a harder time right now. And there's no silos, you're right. So it's not just about the abandonment of public education and higher education that he's done, but it's all these kind of foundational supports that federal policy had done to help people have a better life.
Talking to Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, coming to Wisconsin for a special event today about the cuts in the Trump mega bill. And I've heard you describe these cuts as children facing, which I take to mean you're not going to take care of these cuts by buying, you know, fewer staplers for the classrooms and you know, some extra equipment in the cafeteria.
No.
Just how direct will parents and children and educators feel from these cuts?
So there's several different ways they're going to feel it. This is what people are going to feel immediately. SNAP, or nutritional services. We basically, in America, try to make sure we subsidize every child's lunch and breakfast. That's going to change. We're going to go back to lunch shaming, which is one of the cruelest things that we can do to kids, meaning that they have to pay for their lunch or show that they are poor in order to get their lunch for free. That's really terrible to do in a school. That's going to happen almost immediately because of all the red tape. Then let's take special needs kids. Under the federal law right now, and sorry, I am a social studies teacher, there are two ways that we help special needs kids. One is through something called the IDEA, which is the Individuals with Disabilities and in Education Act. That money should have been increased. It has been increased every year. It was flat. It was not increased this year. And so what's happening is districts have to find more and more money themselves. And number two, right now, even worse, the grants the secondary grants that many districts got, those grants have been cut by Linda McMahon. So that's making it harder. Like after school and summer school, we got some of them replaced, but that's making it harder. And number three, Medicaid, it's called different things in different states, but it's pays for things like wheelchairs and accessibility and OTs and PTs. And every parent with a kid with a disability understands what I'm talking about. All that stuff is being pulled back. So districts, if you have a kid who has mobility issues, you need a PT. If you don't have a physical therapist, then how's that kid going to go to school? So what's happening is that districts all across Wisconsin are scurrying. And you know, in Wisconsin, what happened when Scott Walker cut all that funding statewide. You saw what happened to scores. You saw what happened to schools. And so this is happening in lots of different places. And districts are basically saying, what are we supposed to do? It effectively, they have to go to the taxpayers next year to get a tax increase. So what Donald Trump has done is he's forced, if school districts want to have these services, they're forcing people to pay more taxes locally so that Donald Trump could give a tax cut to billionaires.
And finally, there continue to be large crowds that show up at events like this, at listening sessions, primarily for Democrats, but the occasional Republican pops up. And again, a large crowd wants to show up. Even though the bill is passed, the bill can't be stopped anymore. Why do you think that is? And then to wrap things up moving forward, what is it that you would like people to do?
So it's really important. And again, I'm putting my social studies hat on right now. We have never been in a moment like this in America. And I don't care. And look, I actually left the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. I said, no, I don't want to be part of it anymore. I want to have a little bit more independence here. I don't care if you're a Republican, an independent, a Democrat. In America, our voice matters, and people's voices matter. And the only, these politicians need to be accountable to the people on the ground, not so scared of Donald Trump that they don't listen to the people on the ground. Now, I understand why they're scared of Donald Trump. He bullies people. You know, there's a lot of screeds on Twitter. I understand why people are afraid. But if you're a politician elected to represent District 3, you got to represent the people in District 3. And then that's part of the reason why people have to show up. People have to exercise their voice. You can't just exercise your voice a minute before an election. This has to be about what is good for Americans. And for us, what is good for working people? Working people made America. Working people deserve to have policy in America that helps them, not hurts them. And that's what we're trying to do here.
Randy Weingarten is National President of the American Federation of Teachers. Randy, thank you very much. You've
been
very generous with your time. Safe travels.
Thank you so much.
And there's Randy Weingarten. Talked to her about 5 o'clock this morning before she hopped on the plane to head out for the event in Eau Claire later today. So there was only so much ground that we could cover. For example, one of the areas we didn't get into was the way that this regime is trying to all but abolish the U.S. Department of Education. And by the way, for folks going, why do you say regime? Why don't you just say Trump administration? There's actually a reason for that. It would be called the Trump administration if it were just as an executive branch facing some guardrails from either Congress or the United States Supreme Court. But the fact that Congress and the Supreme Court have become wholly owned subsidiaries of Trump Incorporated means you basically have a regime right now. The minority party, in this case, the Democratic Party, you know, can't do much, whether Republicans or Democrats are in the minority. There's only so much they can do. Our system works with its checks and balances if there are people within your own parties who say, sir or ma'am, I agree with you much of the time, but not on this one. And there have been more times than any of us can count the number of instances where, again, if we still had, say, a John McCain, or if Mitt Romney had a spine, would be able to stand up and say, I'm sorry, sir, you can't impose tariffs unilaterally. That's something only Congress can do. You can't abolish a cabinet agency. That's only something Congress can do. But Congress and the Supreme Courts, they're just letting this all go. I mean, we're actually to the point now where Trump mused yesterday about changing the name of the Department of Defense back to the War Department, because he says it sounds nicer. I mean, this is the kind of thing we're dealing with these days. So that's why I say regime. So they're going after the U.S. Department of Education and talking about giving education back to the states, quote unquote. We're giving education back to the states. But state education leaders are going to tell you, whether it's at this event today in Eau Claire or any other time, that they're getting the buck passed to them, but not the bucks. They're not getting any of the support that they would otherwise be getting from a federal government that wanted to operate in partnership to educate our children. No different than this current legislature in Madison. Again, does not want to be a partner in the education of our children. They want the dismantling and the privatization of our public schools. And they do it slowly, year after year, with funding that does not keep up with inflation. And instead, pours more resources into a voucher program for schools that are perform no better. There's zero empirical evidence that on the whole they perform better, but they can bend certain rules, they can discriminate in certain ways, and they help, again, move us toward an era where people can actually make corporate profits and shareholder dividends off the education of our children. Those are the folks that are in charge right now. And so for somebody like Randy Weingarten to come to Wisconsin and all of these other leaders to gather together to call public attention to it is a necessary thing in this day and age. Because again, the bill may have passed. A lot of these cuts are going to happen. And it's going to take a very long time to recover from them, if at all. But one of the first things you do is try to stop the bleeding. Stop letting things get worse. And that won't happen now until, you know, the next midterm elections, provided those midterm elections actually go on without being rigged or otherwise obstructed. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Earl Ingram, Sean O'Malley, Joe Sapecki, all coming up in our 8 o'clock hour. We'll be back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Right now it's 53 degrees here in the Chippewa Valley. It is 56 in La Crosse. Oshkosh, you're at 56. Amory 55, and in front of Rooster's Restaurant in Racine, it is 54 degrees right now. Coming up later across the Civic Media Radio Network, the Maggie Dawn Show is on from 4 until 6. And let's see, today on the program, she's got State Representative Jody Emerson from the Chippewa Valley showing up at about 4:30 this afternoon. And then after 5 o'clock, an interesting bipartisan slate here. You've got former Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen and Mike Tate, the former chair of the State Democratic Party. They are two members of the Democracy Defense Project, and they will be talking about the attacks on mail-in voting by Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. I'm not aware of anybody else, honestly, who is going after mail-in voting with as much prominence as Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. And why we're letting that happen is beyond me, but to credit Republicans, and again, I've talked about that spinal fortitude that more Republicans need. I'd like to see it out of current elected officials, but I'll take it from former elected officials like J.B. Van Hollen and others who are standing up as part of the Democracy Defense Project and saying, no, mail-in voting is working just fine. It works fine in Wisconsin for Republican voters, for Democratic voters, for independent voters. And so J.B. Van Hollen and Mike Tate will be talking to Maggie Dawn about that coming up at 5 o'clock this afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show. In our Up North News newsletter that you can sign up for at upnorthnewswi.com, we've got a story there about Social Security. And you know, we just talked about the push for privatization of our public schools. Well, Social Security is no less threatened, especially when you have a Trump cabinet secretary talking about how these Trump baby bonds might be kind of a backdoor way to privatize Social Security. Yeah, I actually said that out loud. The last time a Republican president started to make moves toward privatizing Social Security, that would be George W. Bush, it cost him dearly in his own midterm elections and harmed his second term. Because people know what they like. They know that they like to work. And when they're done working, they like to retire. And they have paid into Social Security and to Medicare all their working lives. And what good does it do to work all your life, get to your old age, and not be able to access the benefits that you've been paying for because you've got a group that, A, wants to just take care of billionaires, and so they're going to take some of that money to pay for tax cuts, and B, wants to privatize it so that, you know, basically you're left to the whims of the casino we know as Wall Street. And So in our newsletter today is an article from, you know, one Wisconsin Social Security recipient talking about the importance of protecting Social Security in this day and age, and not monkeying with it. So look for that article in our newsletter today. And also, we're going to talk to Melissa Baldoff in about a half hour here in our climate check about the lawsuit recently filed by several young people in Wisconsin, filed by two nonprofit groups on their behalf, all about the climate. And that if you have a state constitution like Wisconsin does in other states with language that is indicative of protecting the resources of the state for future generations, then maybe you should not have state laws that are specifically written to favor the fossil fuel industry, as Republicans have wanted to do in Madison and in Washington, D.C. as well. So you can read more about that in our newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click subscribe in the top banner there. On the text line from Jim in Brookfield, thank you, Pat, for getting up early to record the interview with Randy Weingarten of AFT. A key measure of a society is the quality of the public school system. She was able to clearly explain the ongoing assault on public schools by the Trump regime and the Scott Walker-supported private school group. Thank you, Jim in Brookfield, for that text. I appreciate that very much. There's a countdown app on my phone now, counting down to my next birthday next year. So where are we at? 311 days, something like that. Turning 62. I bring that up because of talking about privatizing Social Security and the whole change in thinking about retirement, that we used to have pensions. We used to have companies that wanted to take care of their workers. You work for us. We take care of you when it's time for you to retire. And we had many more pensions in this country. But somewhere along the line, in this era of Reaganism, came the thought, well, you know what? You take care of yourself. We'll give you these things called 401ks, and you can put money in there pre-tax. And then you pick the stocks. You pick, do you want to be aggressive? Do you want to be passive? Do you want stocks? Do you want bonds? Domestic stocks, international stocks. You make all those decisions. And if you choose right, you're going to make even more money. But if you choose wrong, well, you know, tough hop. A lot of folks preferred the security of a pension that was professionally managed. So imagine my surprise when doing some retirement planning a week before last, and seeing that of all the different jobs I've worked at, I've got a couple of different 401ks here, a 401k there, a rollover IRA over here. And seeing that one of the places where I worked many moons ago it was actually a pension plan. And it was a very small amount. When I left that particular place of employment, I did not think anything of it. What a lesson in compound interest and time. You just leave that alone in that pension. It grows to the point where I now, in 311 days or whatever, it starts to pay that pension at 62, not 65. Now, it's not going to be that much. It's, you know, it's egg money. It's maybe to put some gas in the car. But it's something. It's something reliable, and it's a reminder of what we had and what we can get back to in this country. Instead of privatizing everything, is actually taking care of the public, of our workers, instead. Earl Ingram, coming up after the news. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.